Hey everybody, and welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast. Not sure what episode number this is, but this week I have the pleasure of interviewing my co-host, Benny Ueda. What's going on, brother?
Not much. Just hanging out at my parents' house here, just a little bit north of Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
And enjoying doing these in-person interviews.
I know. If you missed last weekend's episode, we just got done recording that, and that was kind of Ben interviewing me. So this time we switched it up. We put him in the hot seat.
Yes, also the seat that occasionally makes farty noises.
Yeah, so he doesn't fart. They're not all farts, let's just say that. They're not all farts.
None of them are.
Okay, cool. So one thing we talked about with me was just kind of, one of the topics was starting. Like, What did people think? What were your aspirations going into it? And basically, why did you start what you did? And I think we come from it at totally different angles.
Yeah.
Not necessarily like why we did it or motives behind it, but just the situation we were in and the surrounding situation. So I come at it from, I was in school, didn't really have a job, and I knew that what I was going to school for wasn't what I wanted my job to be. You come from it having, I mean, started successful businesses, sold a tech company, made really good money.
Yeah.
So you're going from, you know, just take it from there.
I think there's a lot of ways to sort of figure something out.
Yeah.
I think you can figure out by what you want to do, and I think you can figure out by what you don't want to do.
Right.
So I came to this sort of path by a combination of both. So I sort of had, in my previous business experiences, starting a design firm, an architecture design firm, which is a business that runs as a custom service provider.
Right.
So you get clients, the clients pay you money to design a project, and then you're always looking for more projects and more clients, and then you try to fulfill them as efficiently, elevate yourself through publishing your work, and so on and so forth. And then I had experience in tech where I was, you know, using the internet as a way to take other knowledge bases, in this case architecture, and reach a big audience really fast over the internet and then monetize that through marketing or sort of media business models.
Right.
So when I sort of sold that company, which was called Free Green, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do next, I sort of did an inventory of the things I had learned over my sort of 10-year-ish career.
Yeah.
And I had learned that I love design.
Okay.
And I'm pretty good at it. I'm not the best at it, but I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah.
I also know that my background always impacts the way I design. I went to design school with people that could design the most incredible things, and it didn't worry them that they didn't know how to build them. I could never let go of that. I could never just do total, like, fantastic, crazy design. I'd always have to know, okay, wait, how am I going to make it?
Right.
So that can be a little bit of a hindrance sometimes in design competitions where you just have to create a fantastic rendering, but we'll figure out that later. So I wanted to figure out a career shift where I could use that, my own constraints, as an advantage. I also knew that I wanted to design things that my family could have afforded when I was a kid. Grew up with on very modest means. So those were the main sort of first two things. I knew that I believed fundamentally that people were going to consume more of their media content online, on their phones, on computers, rather than television and magazines. Pretty safe prediction.
Yeah.
I knew that the people that had a lot of power and influence in producing old media were tended to be a little bit arrogant and not really giving enough credit to how the new media was changing the requirements for the types of content that people wanted to consume.
In that they're kind of struggling to fit the space even if they wanted to.
Right.
Okay.
I remember watching HGTV shows, and I remember saying, why do these shows suck so bad?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's because they're talking about all these things that I find interesting: home construction, renovation, design, interior style, lifestyle, you know, customization. I'm fascinated by all those things. Those shows are stupid because they don't teach you a damn thing about any of it.
Right.
They just show you a before and after. So literally, they take all these interesting topics and boil it down into something that's like, here's how much it cost, and here's what it looked like before, and here's what it looked like in after, and oh my God, will they finish it on time?
And the whole process is lost.
And they spread that all out over 22 minutes or 42 minutes or whatever their sort of episode is. So I knew that I was interested in these things. The people that were doing it on traditional platforms were terrible at it. And that anyways, that there's going to be a shift towards these new platforms. So saw that as a good opportunity. And I knew that in particular in terms of content, that more and more people were going to be consuming video content,
yeah,
as opposed to reading. So it kind of all became clear to me that I wanted to work with my hands. I wanted to do creative stuff. I wanted to embrace the constraints as a way of reaching an audience, you know, sort of a more affordable audience that often gets neglected by designers. And I want to do that in video as a form of medium, because that's what the future at that point was.
Yeah.
So that led to the thing. I was like, I'm going to start making videos. I hadn't thought at all about YouTube, because I posted my first videos all
that's
on
true.
Vimeo.
Yeah.
So
I forgot about that. Yeah.
I knew I was more confident in videos than I was in which platforms. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because I had sort of seen MySpace sort of come and then Facebook sort of supersede it. YouTube obviously has been way more stable than that, but I didn't know that much about social media and the platforms. I just knew those sort of basic outlines.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I had never really watched YouTube videos. I mean, I'd seen them when people emailed me funny cat videos or people getting kicked into nuts and stuff like that.
So where did you see it going? I mean, I know you put it on Vimeo, but so from my perspective as well, I also had the luxury of seeing you become successful before I started.
You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. So I know you say you had confidence like in video and in media, but where did you even see it going?
So I started on Vimeo, and because Vimeo doesn't have big numbers, when I got the first 1,000 views, I think if I got that first 1,000 views on YouTube, I wouldn't have thought it meant anything. On Vimeo, I was like, oh, this is awesome. People are sharing this and emailing this to each other and stuff like that. So I just kept making the videos, building out the websites, had really good plans.
Is that what it was you thought?
Yeah.
It was kind of like an Anna White format where it was like the website was what was monetized.
Anna White was a huge influence, even though she wasn't really producing a lot of video at that time.
Yeah.
But
that's interesting. You were going to be the Anna White with video.
I mean, it was one of the things, yeah.
Not to like...
And a little bit more modern, different style, stuff like that.
Yeah. I feel like I am oversimplifying that, but just like for the sake of...
No, it's fine. Anna's a friend, and I think she is one of the pioneers of sort of sharing, producing and sharing design for sort of furniture or DIY projects online. I think she'd be, if you were to do a Mount Rushmore of this sort of industry, she would definitely be one of the four.
Right.
It was, I was producing video on Vimeo, getting into sort of like, I think once I reached sort of like 30,000 views on Vimeo, I reached out to Ryobi. And sort of said, hey, I used your drill in a video. And then from there, it was just pushed towards getting them as an initial product sponsor. And from there, it was sort of off to the races. Once they said, hey, we're going to give you product, no money, just product, I was super encouraged. And that's kind of, you know, about 2 or 3 months in, I kind of was starting to really believe in it. The big audience push came when I finally sort of said, these videos are doing well on Vimeo, but let me just put these all on YouTube. I think I had like 8 to 10 videos finished.
Yeah.
And I just uploaded them all to YouTube, ignored the YouTube channel for a few months, came back, and there's like 5,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I
think something's here.
I didn't do a single answering a comment or anything on YouTube other than just upload the videos, and I came back and there's 5,000 subscribers. I was like, I'm going to switch to this as my primary hosting service. And then that's when the audience building really began.
Because it was less, I mean, so I viewed it this way, and I think 90% of people that start DIY and put videos on YouTube is the aggregate that you get found through. But you were just using Vimeo as a hosting service.
Yeah.
Like, you weren't expecting Vimeo to introduce people to
you. Nope. And I mean, a little bit of people from sort of sharing it or liking it and stuff like that.
But nothing that's going to be like life changing.
But the thing that did actually get me a lot of traffic to the website is that every time I made a video, I would email it to different editors at different design blogs.
Oh.
Because this was before, you know, Pinterest really was over. And so design blogs were huge. Apartment therapy was huge. I mean, it still is, but I feel like there's more of an emphasis on Pinterest and social media feeds now.
I think so.
So I would email it to editors and say, hey, check out this project. And then they would often post it on apartment therapy, on Remodelista. Not so much now because they know who I am and they find it now and they're subscribing to me.
People find you don't have to show it to people.
Right. But at that time, I was exhibiting my work, right?
Yeah.
I was saying, here's what I made. Feel free to embed these things. You can use them. If you give a link back, great, but not required. And so I was getting really good traffic even without YouTube simply by sort of making content, taking really good still images that people that ran design websites felt was good enough to post and share with their audience.
Right. Because if you have all the images that you have, all the stills there, you've done a lot of the work for them. They just have to copy and paste it into their site.
Yep. So it was, again, it's like I've said for everything, whether you're looking for building your audience or whether you're looking to make income through sponsorships, you get those by creating wins for other people.
Adding value.
Yep. So when I wanted more media exposure, I was creating nice packages of content that other people could use to meet their sort of content quotas.
Yeah.
When I wanted to get ad revenue or sponsorship revenue, it was creating great examples of how their products made making my designs better.
Possible.
Right.
Yeah.
So in both cases, it's just packaging up these wins, handing these wins to other people, being polite and not frustrated when they politely decline.
Yeah.
Just going from there.
Cool. So how much risk, like personally, how much of a risk were you even thinking it was? Or were you kind of like at the time, I guess I don't know like the extent of everything, but was it one of those things where you would quit Free Green, or not quit Free Green, but you were like scaling back your involvement with that? It got acquired.
Yeah. It got acquired. So
it was
still
a thing where you had money to spend and time to spend, or you had money.
A little bit.
You had money saved and time to spend. So might as well try.
I was risking a lot more time than money.
Yeah.
So I knew that like I wanted to figure out something that I could get really excited about for the next 5 or 10 years was how I was sort of approaching it. Now, I don't make 5 or 10 year plans, but I just said, I know I'm always going to be involved in the designing stuff. I know I'm pretty interested in tech and new media and where that's going. But I didn't know if that was going to be becoming someone that teaches design online, right?
Right.
I have a background as a professor at sort of, architecture schools and stuff like that. Maybe it'd be something like that. Maybe it'd be making videos. Maybe it'd be doing these other things. So I felt like I was really risking my time that I spent for the videos. You know that our business is mostly low capital.
Yeah.
Use your laptop. A $500 video camera is what I had at the time.
Yeah.
I had like another like $300, $400 still camera. And with those sort of, couple $1,000s worth of equipment, was making my first videos on the, with using iMovie software. So it wasn't a lot of capital or risk in terms of money, but certainly that first sort of 3 to 6 months of time invested in it, I didn't know if an audience was ever going to come. I didn't know sponsorships were going to buy on. But I was pretty sure that it worked. And again, that's where it's like finding those concepts that you believe in helped me overcome those doubt. Because anytime I had the doubt, I could just say, wait, do I think people are only going to watch more video online in the future?
Yes.
Yes. Do I think that HGTV can produce that kind of videos efficiently and cheaply? No. Do I think that I can produce videos that people will like to watch for a very low cost? Yeah. So...
Yeah.
When you say it that way, it's pretty, that demand is trending in your favor. And if you believe that you can provide supply at a reasonable cost, that's way cheaper than any agency than hiring designers and video people can. It's not that much risk. It's just managing the sort of how much sort of do you have, how much time can you put into it versus still meeting your own sort of bills and stuff like that.
So how long until you were successful at it?
How long until...
How long were you like, oh, okay, cool. And I know you talked about, hitting a couple milestones on Vimeo. But, when was it like, oh, this is really, this is what I'm going to... Because I think starting, you have the idea that if this does work and I do it for a few years, awesome. If not, okay, I tried. But at what point were you like, okay, this is working. I'm going to do this for the next few years.
I would say I'll give you 3 different indicators because they all... They all never made me feel like I was a success in the sort of final way. Like, I'm done working, right?
Exactly. But what were those?
Right. So the 3 things was, the first one was just having 10,000 people watch a video.
Mm-hmm.
Just one of the videos reaching 10,000 views. I was like, wow,
that's a lot.
That's like a stadium full of people.
Yeah.
So that was the first one. Just really marveling. And I think we way too often lose scale of that. Because, we do views in the millions now. But 10,000 people is a remarkable thing. If you write a book that 10,000 people read, that's incredible.
You get a book 10,000 people buy. is incredible. You know what I mean?
Let alone read it.
Yeah.
So that was the first one. The second one was the first paid sponsorship, which was Ryobi. And that was showing me that I knew, because step one, I knew that I could reach an audience and the audience liked it. And the audience was willing to share it with their friends, which meant a lot. Yeah. So that was sort of success one. Two was that other businesses, in this case Ryobi, was interested in paying me to do more of what I was doing. So I knew that I had it on the consumer and audience front. I knew that I was attractive to other businesses from the sponsorship front. And then from there, I think the third one was just when I sort of started making more money doing this than I had in anything else I'd ever done. And that was the sort of the third one, is to saying that I knew that the two fundamentals, I was capable of them, and then seeing that translate into a good financial and creative situation for myself was sort of the third one, that was sort of saying that, like, no, I'm mixing these two things at a scale that's worthwhile.
Yeah. So 3 years in? 4 years in?
About 4 years in now. I think I started in end of 2013, so a little 3.5 years.
So probably year two was when things got comfortable and not routine, but you sort of understood this is the format that does work. This is what's leading me to like,
yeah,
the right, I guess, I don't know the right word I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think, I'd say with each year I've done things a little bit differently.
Okay.
In terms of the how much I experiment with design of the actual physical projects, versus how frequently I produce, versus whether I focus on really videos I think are really interesting, or whether I focus on getting out a whole broad catalog of useful projects. I've tried a lot of different things, and they've all seemed to work.
Right.
But I think I have different motivation to do them at other times. Mm-hmm. So I'm never looking for that perfect formula of here's what YouTube wants. Again, I never think about algorithms at all. I was pretty good at math, better than most people, but not good enough to really be like to talk intelligently about algorithms.
Right.
So what I do know is that when I feel motivated and excited about things, I'm super prolific. When I'm kind of like going through the motions, I find a bunch of ways to check my phone or get snacks and sort of procrastinate.
Yeah.
So for me, finding the projects or types that felt sort of novel and sort of switching focuses every once in a while, whatever I lose by that being not optimal for what my audience wants, I'm going to gain by me being more invested in working faster.
Cool. So you're growing a team. You've got, obviously, Jesse, who's been working with you for a long time. But
Jamie is the
new one. Jamie, I knew it. But Jamie's been producing videos now. Is that so you do less, or is that so there's just more overall out there?
Two things. It's to increase the total supply of videos that we're producing.
Yeah.
And it's also to provide flexibility. So I know that if I have a certain amount of commitments to produce videos for different sponsors, sometimes that sheer volume of videos that's needed will keep me from doing an experiment, because I'm like, well, I have so much to do right now, I'll experiment later.
Right.
I never want to push experimentation off, because that's how you grow intellectually. And you also discover ways to grow financially and business-wise. So by having Jamie and Jesse also both producing videos for the channel, if I have an idea that's going to take me a month to sort of experiment with and really figure out, I know that I'm not going to shirk my commitments, because I have a team that can fill in videos in that time period. So again, it's to increase the overall supply, but also to provide flexibility so I can pursue research and development type things.
Cool. So you have big ideas. What are some of the things? Like you talk about, you want time to be able to experiment. You want time to commit to bigger things. Like,
so one of the bigger things is what I'm doing right now out here in California, is I'm working on a solar-powered workshop. So a complete freestanding workshop off the grid where you can make my type of projects, and it's all coming from renewable energy. That's a bigger project. That's going to take that. You can't do that in two or three days.
Yeah.
It's going to take a few weeks. But I know that while I'm out here in California, back in Boston, my team's got my back, and they're producing a bunch of really awesome new furniture video projects.
Yeah. So I got a couple more questions. We've talked about YouTube. We've talked about Vimeo. But social media is becoming more and more rather than just video hosting. And I think you're growing your Instagram faster than most people in our space. And I don't want to talk about like how you're growing your Instagram fast. I want to talk about why.
Mm-hmm.
because there's emphasis on the idea that YouTube is, it's not immune to dying. You know what I mean? Like, no. There's no reason YouTube can't fail. And I know that there's that obvious, like, you got to diversify, you got to do this. But why Instagram, and why with so much effort are you putting into that?
Instagram's the channel that personally I check
like
the most.
Like,
I like it. I check it the most frequently. I don't log into YouTube that often unless I'm posting something. If I do watch videos on YouTube, it might be for like 20 minutes. I watch like, you know, 3 to 5 videos. But I use Instagram more. And what I, so from a personal standpoint, I enjoy it. I like the brevity. I like the sort of that the network is less anonymous than it is on YouTube. So I don't get a lot of horrible comments. I get mostly very positive comments on YouTube. I'd say maybe like 1-3% are kind of negative.
But that anonymity makes it
still possible, right?
Yeah.
With Instagram, it's almost, I would say, you know, 100 times more positive than even the YouTube.
Yeah.
So I like it for that. I also find it's a great way that you can interact with people much better because you can interact with sort of direct message rather than just answering comments that maybe people see or don't see.
And comments get lost.
Yes.
Like if you respond to someone's comment, just because of the volume of it, YouTube, why does it not organize its comments to where if I respond to someone's comments, that should be separate
should
and
be.
Organized.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry.
So I like it for that. And then also it creates, from a business standpoint, it creates a whole nother inventory for branded posts.
Yeah.
And particularly, I really like Instagram stories. Because I don't want to, I'm proud of like the curation of my feed, my Instagram feed. I like the way it looks. I like that it's this archive of projects that I've done. I post still images. I post video synopsises. I post little product demos where I show how the project works.
But not a lot of fluff.
Not a lot of fluff. But the Instagram stories also gives me a way to sort of communicate in real time to what I'm thinking about, what I'm experimenting with, what I'm eating, what I'm doing for fitness,
lifestyle.
A little more lifestyle stuff, yeah. And that's also a great inventory for branded posts.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say I'm experimenting with a new whitewashed finish for oak.
Okay.
I'm not going to make a whole video about that, but I can give a little blast and that'll reach like 15 to 20,000 people in an instant. It only took me 15 seconds to stop staining it and show that, share the product. So it's completely authentic content. It's useful for people doing it. And if they don't like it, it's only 15 seconds.
Right.
And they chose to click on it anyway. So
yeah.
I think the branded posts within Instagram stories are a really great way to sort of demonstrate, do product demos to people that are quick and unobtrusive and don't clutter up your curated feed.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, I appreciate the conversation. I feel like I've learned a little bit. I feel like I learn a little bit every time I talk to you. So shout out to everybody listening on our YouTube channel. We're watching on our YouTube channel because we're filming. If you're not watching it, you should have done it. It's too late. You don't want to watch it.
But go subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Thanks. That was what I was going to say. if you haven't given us a 5-star rating on iTunes, we appreciate that. Leave us some comments on things you want to know about Ben. If you have questions, give us a comment, and maybe next time I interview him, I'll ask him that. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for watching. If that's what you're doing, have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll see you on Thursday. Bye, everybody.
Bye.